Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Tuesday, January 9th. I'm Alan Chartok. During a State of the State address last week, Governor Andrew Cuomo said New York will explore a statewide payroll tax. It comes as the new federal tax law limits individual state and local tax deductions to $10,000. Here to discuss the payroll tax and other economic measures mentioned in the State of the State are E.J. McMahon of the Empire State and Ken Pukowski of the Business Council of New York State. We want to hear from you, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. EJ, Ken, your calls and much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. During a State of the State address last week, Governor Andrew Cuomo said New York will explore a statewide payroll tax. It comes as a new federal tax law limits individual state and local tax deductions to $10,000. Here to discuss the payroll tax idea and other economic measures mentioned in the State of the State are E.J. McMahon, founder and research director of the Empire Center for Public Policy and our go-to guy on complicated subjects, and Ken Pukowski, vice president of the very prestigious Business Council of New York State. E.J. and Ken, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thanks. Hello. Good to be here.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about the idea of a payroll tax in New York? But before we go there, what is it? Now, I have to say, I read the Times. I read it. I can't figure for the life of me. My PhD is in politics, not economics. And I keep reading those paragraphs over and over again. I don't know what it means. What does it mean for us here at WAMC, for example?
It's a flat tax on your paycheck, and you pay it today. You pay a payroll tax for unemployment insurance purposes. FICA is a payroll tax. Medicare is a payroll tax. It's a flat tax that's dedicated to a specific purpose. Unlike the personal income tax, which goes into the general coffers of both the federal government and state, and they tend to be graduated based on, you know, higher tax rate based on higher income.
But I don't get something. First of all, I don't understand what you say. But secondly, the question is, I keep reading that it's deductible.
Well, it's a payroll tax is paid by employers. So when you say, what does it mean to us here? You're a nonprofit and you don't file a federal tax return, which is one of the questions that raised about this, because there's a lot of nonprofits in New York. The notion is that most employers are private sector and have to file a tax return. There's no question that when you're the cost of doing business is deductible for an employer at the basic level. Payroll tax you pay for your employees. The employer's share of the Social Security and Medicare payroll tax is deductible. If you have a payroll that has, just make it up, you have a payroll of four people on it, and the payroll fully loaded with all of their salary and their benefits is $300,000.
Yes.
You pay a tax for the total pay of all those people up to a certain amount. You pay a certain percentage in Social Security and Medicare tax. You do that here now. You send the federal government a check. I don't know how often they bill it. Is it like annually or a couple of times a year?
The UI taxes are quarterly.
Unemployment insurance taxes are quarterly, which are required by law. And then there's the Social Security tax. The employer pays it. That payroll tax is deductible for the employer. An income tax, so back up a minute. A payroll tax is fundamentally a tax paid by an employer, although there's one big exception to that. The Social Security tax is split between employers and employees, as is the Medicare tax. If you're somebody else's employee, you pay half of the Social Security and Medicare tax. If you're self-employed, you have to pay the whole thing yourself. So everybody listening to us, whether they know it or not, who's of working age and working, is paying a payroll tax. Your payroll tax, actually a portion of your payroll tax you pay for yourself if you're self-employed, is also deductible for you. But the part that's the employee share is not deductible. So if you're employed by somebody else, your share of the payroll tax is not deductible. Your income tax is based on your income and based on your characteristics like family size and marital status, and in some cases age, which you put on a form and send to the government, federal and state, and it, as Ken said, it differs by income. And that's your responsibility. Your employer has nothing to do with it except your employer there's withholding. So your employer is required by law to withhold a share of your income every week and send it periodically to the state and federal government so that they get their money. They don't have to wait till the tax filing season to get their money. And then at the end, you reconcile it with your tax return, and you either get something back or owe more.
Did you want to add something to that, Ken?
Well, I was waiting for the next question, but I'll talk about why this is important today. When federal tax reform happened, before federal tax reform, if I made enough money in New York State that my state income tax was $20,000,
yes,
I could deduct that, and that would deduct that from my federal taxable income.
Right.
So my federal tax would come down.
But now you can't. Now it's only $10,000.
I can deduct up to $10,000 of it. So the idea of a payroll tax, and the governor didn't say he was going to do it. He's going to explore that and other ways to mitigate the effects, the adverse effects of federal reform. The idea is to shift that from a tax that's not deductible to one that is. Most of the taxes that remain deductible are those on the employer side. The taxes that a business pays remain fully deductible. So instead of paying that $10,000, the non-deductible $10,000 at the employee level as a personal income tax, pay it as $10,000 as a payroll tax on the employer. It's deductible, and the math can actually work that everyone ends up with the same amount of money in their pocket at the end of the day if, and it's a big if, as the employer takes the employee's tax liability, I also reduce your pay a little bit. You're not paying as much tax, so the employee would end up with the same after-tax money in their pocket. The employer would as well, because that increased tax liability is deductible. The math can work. That's sort of the concept.
So, guys, assuming I understand what you're talking about, what is likely to happen here? For example, this is interesting, EJ, because we can't deduct anything because we don't pay federal income tax, right?
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, you're like, yeah, right, yeah. I mean, part of the problem with a payroll tax, and you're confused, like you're saying, you're not quite understanding. I mean, this is actually, that gets at part of the problem with this, because in theory, if you really know a lot about taxes and think about it really hard, you think, well, in theory, it's possible. But actually, for the same reasons that you're having trouble like figuring this out, it's actually why it's also not practical or feasible. Because
it's pretty easy to sketch out in an Excel spreadsheet, writing it into the tax code.
Writing the tax code is near impossible.
You mean the state tax code.
Yeah.
Now, you're both conservatives, right?
You can call me sir. Are you conservative?
Yeah, you're both really conservative fellows. Is this something that the conservative group approves of?
I would only speak for myself.
Okay, please.
If you were designing a tax code from scratch, you were saying we have a brand new state, we want to have a tax code, and if you were not completely resolved from the outset not to tax income at all, because some states don't, but if you were saying we have a state, we have a tax code, we're going to have some tax on income. Economically, the most efficient, least distortive, most pro-growth way to do it, and I think more than just conservative economists would agree on this, would be to have a low, flat payroll tax rate. Just have a big, broad base, no exceptions, apply a fairly low rate to it, and run it through employers. That's the most efficient way to do it. But we don't. We don't have a blank slate. We have a state that has a very large and highly progressive income tax. Taking a $49 billion tax and converting it into a payroll tax that doesn't end up increasing taxes on anyone, but simply ends up preserving the value of some tax break, is virtually, in fact, actually impossible. And now, one of the things you pointed out was, not all payrolls not all employers are taxable to begin with. There's no deductibility value for WAMC because it's a nonprofit. That's true also for a large segment of the healthcare and higher ed sector is also nonprofit. They don't pay taxes. This is not deductible for them.
Nor is state or local government.
State or local government employ well over 1 million people and account for 14% of all working people and payrolls in the state. They don't pay taxes. So the question is, you're not actually preserving the value of some deduction for those people, which is probably like 20% to a quarter of all workers in the state when you talk about all those sectors. Also, a deduction What's a deduction is worth to you if you deduct? And can we point out that only a third of all New Yorkers itemized deductions to begin with, and only a subset of them are even are actually going to be hurt by the loss of salt?
And that, of course, is going to get worse.
Right. But, yeah. Well, I mean, it'll actually be a smaller percentage after this. If you are another big problem with this is your value of your deduction is what your federal tax rate is. Federal tax rates for on individuals now are much higher than the tax rate on business. The top corporate tax rate is now going to be 21%. So the deduction is actually worth less on a dollar for dollar basis.
Okay, we have to take a short break. We're going to do that, Ken and EJ, and we'll be right back. And we'll have you call in if you have a question on this complicated question, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Take it away, Zachary.
Support for WAMC comes from Interim Healthcare. For 46 years, providing home care for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses, serving the greater Capital Region, Columbia, and Saratoga counties and Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies, and performance, newpaltz.edu/theatre. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. And Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, heated bird baths, binoculars, jewelry, nature toys and games, and chimes, where people and nature come together. WildBirdJunction.com.
We're back. Thank you, Zachary. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. E.J. McMahon, founder and research director of the Empire Center for Public Policy, Ken Pukalski, vice president of the Business Council of New York State. So that was point one, which is, the idea of the payroll tax. Now let's talk about charitable contributions. That raised its ugly head, too. What was that all about?
Well, you could write a check today, a voluntary payment to government, to state and local government. It would be federally deductible. And the example I've seen is you write a check to the sheriff's department for a reward for tips or something like that. But you could, it's pretty well established case law. So the idea is at the state level, I write a charitable contribution to the SUNY Foundation or something like that. Money that will be used to offset tax revenues. I take that charitable deduction on my federal taxes, get the value of it back to offset the loss of my deductibility of state and local taxes.
And there's no limit on how much you can take there?
Well, technically no, but you run into some legal problems. If the purpose is to offset your state tax liability and to make the math work on this, the credit almost has to be equal to your contribution. The IRS is going to say that's not a charitable contribution. If you bought another example, if I bought a ticket to a charity dinner for $250 and the value of the dinner is $50, I deduct $200, the part that goes, that's the charitable part of the contribution. If I give you a $1,000 contribution and get a tax credit of $999, the IRS is going to say the value of that is one. So really, from what I understand about the IRS position on this and what I've seen, the way these things could be structured, I think it'd be awfully hard to do to produce the value that you're looking for.
Okay, EJ, you want to check in on this or not?
Well, I mean, just to add to that, to make it clear, this only works. Nobody's going to voluntarily give a ton of money, extra money, to the state of New York on the theory that they're getting a tax break unless they no longer have an obligation to the state. It's not constitutional, clearly, to like let some people pay taxes and other. Everybody has to be subject to the same tax bill. So the state would have to create a credit. If I gave $100,000, I'm a rich guy, to the New York State Educational Foundation, you'd have to give me a tax credit for what I would have owed in taxes. And again, as Ken said, the IRS would look at that and say, well, you're actually getting a benefit from that. You're getting a discount on your federal taxes by dint of working on this scam with the state of New York, in effect.
Okay, we got a lot of people on the phone, three people on the phone. That's a lot, considering the discussion. Let's go to Joyce in Massachusetts. All right, Joyce, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I feel like I have probably a rookie question. I hear you talking about replacing the state income tax with a payroll tax, and I understand how that might work for people who get a paycheck from an employer. But what about people who get their income other ways? Would they still be subject to the payroll tax, or is that really not a concern?
That's part of the problem, because, in fact, one-third of all the income tax by the state of New York and probably about half of the revenue raised by the income tax is not generated by wage income. It's generated by savings interest, dividends, and capital gains, including retired people living off their savings. So you couldn't actually replicate the whole income tax based on a payroll tax without slicing and dicing in all sorts of ways. That would be very impractical. That's a very good question. That's one of the many reasons why, when you think about it, this would be unworkable.
This ain't going to work.
No. Yeah, it would provide no relief for that non-wage income taxpayer.
Right. If you're a retired person who's, you know, scrimped and saved all your life and you've been lucky with your tax investments, with your investments, and you've got an income you can live off that's decent for you, and maybe you also itemized and are losing a little bit from the loss of the deduction, this doesn't do anything for you because you're not getting any benefit out of it.
But clearly...
But it sounded like you actually do get a benefit out of it. If they eliminate the state income tax, then your income from investments doesn't get counted anymore. You don't have to pay a tax on that. You're not putting anything into state taxes. Or am I understanding that wrong?
No, you're understanding it correctly. But the thing is, from the state standpoint, they couldn't afford to eliminate your income tax unless they effectively doubled the rate of the payroll tax. In fact, in other words, if you look at the value of all payrolls, and there's a number, it's a known number, of all payrolls in New York State, in order to raise what the state now raises in income tax, the payroll tax rate would have to be 8%. Well, that's roughly double the effective rate actually paid on an average by people who pay an income tax. And it has to be 8%, which is a fairly high rate because there's so many people who don't have wage income. They live off other income, and you'd have to eliminate the tax. It gets very complicated in a hurry.
Okay, that'd be a big shift.
Let me ask you this. If the governor is doing something that, as EJ says, won't work, why is he doing it? Now, you work for the business council, and you got to work with the guy, but is it so he can rant and rage and shoot himself in the foot or what?
Well, there's a real issue here that when you start your state tax return, whether you're an individual or a business, you generally, roughly speaking, start with your federal adjusted income. So all the changes that the feds make will affect New York State tax code. So New York has to go through its code and say, well, this deduction doesn't exist anymore. This one changed. We're going to make a lot of changes in our state business and personal income tax code to reflect what the federal government did. We have to go through that exercise anyway. What the governor said in the state of state, that while doing that, we're going to look at ways, creative ways, to try to mitigate the effect of the loss of full SALT, we call it, state and local tax deductibility. Two ideas that were mentioned in the state, I know payroll tax was mentioned specifically. A charitable contribution has certainly been mentioned after the fact. And who knows what else may come up. But that's why
he knows it's not going to work, right? Just like you guys know it's not going to work.
I don't know if he knows it's not going to work. We don't know what the proposal is yet. There is no proposal. There's a concept, and that's it. Mm. I mean, we've done work ourselves. We've talked to some of our tax attorneys that are members of ours. We talked to the Tax Foundation. EJ and I have talked about this. A lot of people who are interested in tax policy and work in this area have been doing what I do, whip out the spreadsheets, pull out the tax code, and try to see if there's ways to make this work. I don't know if anyone's found one yet, but we'll see.
EJ?
The short answer is it doesn't work on a broad basis. I don't know. You can decide for yourself whether you think Governor Cuomo is the type of person who asks his professional staff, gee, do you think this would work? And then when they say, no, it would be hard, backs off and says, then I'll do something else. I think he's more of a ready, fire, aim kind of guy. But that's my personal opinion.
Ready, fire.
I think, however, I think that you know, there are versions of this where you could take a narrow sort of tax, excise tax, only on very high income people, and like claw back some of it and make it deductible or something. But ultimately, at the end of the day, remember, there's several billion dollars worth of tax benefit, of federal tax benefit. Not that the governor has an exaggerated, overblown number, but is there several billion dollars at core here of net federal tax benefit that New Yorkers are losing? So the question is, can you magically make that go away without raising anybody's taxes totally at the expense of the federal government through some other fashion?
Yes.
The answer is no. Unless if you could, the cleanest route to doing it was if you could simply, and even this is not 100% clean, but it was for the higher income people it's clean, is the charitable deduction angle, where you simply said, you know what, everything you would otherwise owe to us, you can get a full deduction on if you make it as a contribution to our newly set up charitable front. But as Ken was saying, it's highly unlikely that the IRS would not strike that down in a hurry, and at the very least there'd be years of litigation, which I think the IRS would probably win.
Yeah. And one thing I would add, though, is from representing the business council.
Yes.
No matter, even if you can make the academic exercise work in the tax code, at the end of the day, you end up with a new tax on employers, a tax that doesn't exist today.
Yeah.
And today, maybe you devise that in a way that's revenue neutral. You now have a new tax liability where future legislators or future governors makes it easy with small increases in the rate to raise a lot of money on us, on employers, to raise the, you know, above the line cost of business. The other, you know, wild card is, what's Congress going to do? The reason they reduced the deductibility of state and local taxes is to make their budget packet or tax package fit under their budgeting rules. I don't think Congress is going to sit if states can come up with this clever way to reduce federal tax liability by, look at all the states, you know, $30, $40, $50 billion. My guess is they're not going to stand pat. There's going to be efforts to read.
If you found a truly effective way to do this,
this would be a great incentive.
They'd have to figure out something else because it would be a problem for them. Although one argument against that is their numbers were contrived simply to fit under some cap for purposes of them needing only 51 votes in the Senate, and they don't care about blowing a bigger hole in the deficit. That's now true. That they've passed the thing. There's that argument also.
Okay. So, Joyce, thank you very much for that. We'll go to Jim in the Hudson Valley. All right, Jim, you're on.
I'm a self-employed attorney in the Hudson Valley. I have two employees. This doesn't sound good to me. Can you tell me what type of categories of people are winners and what type of categories of people are losers in this?
On a payroll tax, the intent, the winners would be, if you could write it, the intent would be to protect the bottom line of all wage earning New Yorkers. I mean, that's the intent. The folks that would be sort of left out, as we talked with Joyce, is if the bulk of your money is from non-wage income, this approach, no matter, even if you could craft it, isn't going to protect you from the loss of income tax liability.
Yeah, I would say the winners would be.
So how about like real estate investors, landlords?
Well,
winners or losers?
Real estate investors are, depending on their structure, it gets very complicated. There's some class of real estate investors, several classes of them, who are huge winners under the federal tax cut. There are some who are not.
The Trumps and the Kushners.
For instance. And there, people with fairly complex, multi-layered, multiple limited liability corps and lots of passive real estate investments, they're the winners. A simple small business situation generally is a pretty big winner. Actually, they're bigger winners on the pass-through cut than like multi-billionaire, you know, investment bankers who actually did not get a entity-level tax cut.
Now, the pass-through cut,
that's for a company that's a partnership or a subchapter S or a small firm, like it sounds like, for instance, the gentleman on the phone. They're not a corporation. They are an entity whose income passes through to the owners of the poor partners.
Right, sole proprietor.
Right, so if you're sole proprietor, you should make out pretty well under the federal side of this. For instance, if you own a building, some do, some don't. Some are going to find an incentive to own a building, by the way. Your property taxes will remain deductible. So because it's the entity's building. Or you're going to make sure it becomes the entity's building. That's one of the incentives here. The biggest winners by far.
And a different kind of question, more directed at Alan. How much of this is really just a political bid to be anti-Trump?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. That's what it is. You know, this allows him to rant and rave and pound on the dais and say that, you know, he's going to get back at them. But there's a real question based on our experts here as to whether or not this can be done.
I mean, I think it is a sort of a defiant.
As a small business owner, it just seems like we're going to be collateral damage to a presidential bid by our governor.
Well, I would say, just whatever your politics, there's another problem here that we haven't discussed, and I'm sure Ken and his members are conscious of, especially the smaller ones, is there's a cash flow issue here. If you're an employer of a lot of people, and you're suddenly subject to a payroll tax, meaning whether or not it's deductible, even despite no matter what kind of crediting and cross flow they try to do to not somehow perfectly make this not an added net burden to you, you have to come up with added cash to pay to the government on some regular basis. Probably every month at least,
right?
Because that's when withholding is. You've got to come up with the added cash yourself. That's cash flow. And that's a burden on smaller businesses in particular if they're mainly a staff-intensive kind of business.
The business graveyard are filled with those guys.
Well, they're right. Mm-hmm. And for nonprofits, you'll be having even more fundraisers every year, Alan, in order to raise the cash. Well, because it would be cash flow for you. You'd have to come up with more cash than you do now. Mm-hmm. Whatever your cash flow management is, it would be challenged by the need to come up with more cash, even if the state found some way to allegedly make you whole, you'd have to come up with this cash to pay the payroll tax.
I'm against it, Ken.
Right. More frequent fundraisers.
Yes.
Nah, we're not going to do that. Okay. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it very much. All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. It says here, hang up. I'm trying to hang up on the guy. Can't do it. Don't ask me. Just hang up. Okay, there it goes. Let's go to John in Kingston. But before I do, I want to tell you, John's the last guy on the phone. We've now had three more phone calls than I thought we were going to have in this program. And so, because it's complicated stuff, but it's important. And the more we talk about it, the more we learn. That's the way it's done. Okay, so we're going to John, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. John in Kingston. Your turn, John. Go.
Hello. Thanks for the callers or the information today. The last half of the answer to the gentleman before me seems to have answered my question. Basically, I have a very small business. It's labor intensive, and a couple of my employees are making minimum wage. For me to adjust their income so that the payroll tax ends up being a net zero isn't possible. Plus, it's going to be, as was mentioned, the cash flow issue of having to, you know, pay extra money, even if I'm going to get it back next year. Getting it, using it this year, it seems like it's going to be kind of painful for very small micro businesses.
Absolutely right. And you've pointed out, again, looking at the academic exercise, I can show how this could be structured, that the employer and the employee have the same net after-tax income as they would before the SALT deductibility happened, and the costs get shifted to the federal government. One of the big to-dos in that equation is you'd have to reduce wages to reflect the cost of the payroll tax. You can't do that legally for people at or near the minimum wage. And you can imagine the challenges of doing that with a unionized workforce.
And what about even if you could do it, you know, you'd send the guy to the poorhouse.
It's a hard sell on the face of it, no doubt. But these are the practical issues. Again, my spreadsheet shows how it works as a math equation. Trying to write this into tax law, and EJ, you know, early on referenced the complexity of turning a flat payroll tax reflecting the progressive income tax. You know, the example he uses all the time, you could have 2, 3, 4 employees all making the exact same wages with vastly different state tax consequences based on married, single, kids or not, mortgage interest. Right. It'd be near impossible to reflect all the, to write a payroll tax that fairly reflected the vagaries of the income tax that's applied.
Now, Ken, I don't want to interrupt you, but this flashed just in, breaking news, as they say on the television. New York State Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan today signaled his conference is opposed to the adoption of a statewide payroll tax. Ken, I'm sure you're shocked and amazed that one of your partners, you know, in state government would take that attitude.
Yeah, we saw that earlier today. Again, this is, what now, a week old, but the ideas were almost immediately floated as soon as the federal tax reform bill was out. And as I said, there's a lot of people who do this for a living who immediately started looking at how could this work. And so, you know, people are talking to both houses of the legislature, no doubt. People are talking to the tax department, the governor's office, you know, raising the possibilities and these concerns. So I think the biggest, I think one of the most significant issues that the Senate would be responding to, one, it is an increased tax.
They're owned by you guys, right, by the business community, aren't they?
You wish.
They certainly listen to us.
They're also owned by Andrew Cuomo, who could eviscerate them if he wanted to.
It's an increased tax on employers, increased tax on doing business in New York State, and it doesn't come close to solving your issue with the loss of deductibility. It's incredibly complex to do.
I want to stop you right there because we have to take a very short break, and we will be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts. An independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-Gazebo.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe and the U.S. since 1987 with music of Beethoven and Elgar for piano and violin. Sunday, January 28th, 3 p.m. at Skidmore Filene Hall, SaratogaChamberPlayers.org. And Cindy McMahon, Associate Broker at Hunt Real Estate ERA. Senior real estate specialist, offering resources to help guide clients over 50 with their real estate opportunities and challenges. GetCindySold.com.
And we are back, and are we lucky we have two real good guys here with us. E.J. McMahon, founder and research director of the Empire Center for Public Policy, and Ken Pekoske, vice president of the prestigious Business Council of New York State. I would characterize both fellows as somewhat conservative. They both say this payroll tax idea ain't going to work. They both say the Verschlugener or Mischugener idea of making it a charitable deduction aren't going to work either. It's pretty well. Now, Ken, you said you could clear something up in about a second and a half.
Oh, I said one of the other alternatives here, one of the other options, is to actually reduce the taxes that are causing this issue in the first place.
Well, that's such a Republican thing to say, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it's something that needs to be talked about.
No, I know. But your kind always talk about that, right? I mean, I don't mean to be unfair with you, but, you know, that's a pretty standard Republican
Let's start with the top of the list, the temporary surcharge on income taxes scheduled as expire at the end of 2019, I believe, or 2020, I forget.
2019.
This is one of the shorter-lived temporary taxes. I think it's only been 6 years. But the issue here, the real issue, as EJ said earlier, the majority of New York State income taxpayers will see a tax reduction under the federal reforms. And the real risk to New York State is what are the upper-income taxpayers who pay outsized portion of the state income tax. The loss of a couple thousand very high income earners has a huge impact on the New York State budget. So how do you...
So you think they'll move because of this?
You can move yourself, you can move your money, and there's tax planning.
You have a lot more control over the timing and nature of your income, the higher your income is. You don't
most
have
of
to move.
Most of it's not wage, it's capital gains.
Right.
One of the ways you could address that is let that extra 2% roughly tax that's supposed to expire next year expire. that, you know.
How do you pay for state services that way?
According to
the governor's originally enacted budget, he didn't need the money. That's why they made it expire a year earlier than he proposed. Yep. The budget was going to have a surplus without it. Now he's changed his forecast. Whether that forecast stays changed the same way now that this whole thing is the federal uncertainty is cleared up is another question.
Okay, we got to take some calls here. That's what this program is all about. We'll go to Bo in Monson. Bo in Monson, keep it short. Go ahead.
Okay. In regard to federal taxes for tax year 18, I got to just give you a brief scenario and then the question. My wife and I filed jointly. I have Medicare and Social Security. She has neither. I make about $10,000 on the side, working part-time. Her income will be about $50,000 gross. We have a daughter who lives at home. She's insured on the Health Connector, so she's out of the issue, I think.
Is there a dog in the family?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. My wife changed jobs, currently without coverage. Didn't elect COBRA for November, December 17, and January 18 currently. She's applying to the connector. She'll be covered in February. How do we figure that penalty for tax year 18? And what income is used to figure if we do use the penalty, subject to the penalty?
I feel safe in responding on behalf of everyone in this room that we have no idea. And that does not belittle. I can see why this is important to you, quite seriously, with all respect. I have no idea.
Well, you know, when we went on, EJ turned around and said, you know, no matter how we try to explain philosophically what's going on here and programmatically, somebody will call up and say, do my taxes for me.
Right.
And we really can't because we don't know. We don't even know the
particular. Well, that's why you shouldn't create complicated tax codes and run health policy through them.
Because this is the mess of it all.
It's a mess
for you. We don't know whether to accept the penalty, and we don't know whether to just go ahead and pay the $1,800, $2,000 that the COBRA coverage would cost.
Ken, do you want to say something? No.
No, I was going to ask EJ a question.
Okay. Yes. All right. Thank you for that. All right. That's Bo. And now we go to Frank in Greenwich. Okay, Frank in Greenwich, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hello, Alan.
Hey.
My question is a little bit, hopefully it's on your subject, but I'm a small business owner, and I would generally be more concerned about income than how much taxes. So my question is, I don't understand why everybody is so concerned about the tax rate. Because, for instance, I worked a year in New York City. I had to pay more taxes, but my income was about double of what it was here. So that, and I don't understand why, like in the federal government's case, they're having a tax cut when the economy is so good, because they're losing out on money that might help the general welfare and economy to grow even more. So I just can't really understand this panicky idea of, wow, I pay too much taxes. Well, if you have a lot of income, you can pay lots of taxes and it wouldn't matter. You'd still come out ahead.
I think you're talking to the wrong guys here. These guys are representing the richest of us.
Well, the actual, including Barack Obama, who favored a cut in corporate tax. The genesis of all this was a bipartisan agreement on the need to reform and cut corporate taxes. That is actually the core of it.
Right.
And it became the tail that's wagging the dog here actually is a big corporate tax cut, which Donald Trump insisted on making a ginormous corporate, not just a big one, but a ginormous one. So you had Obama willing to take the rate from 35 to 28, the Republicans preferring low 20s to 20, you know, basically 25-ish. If things had stayed the same, there probably would have been a compromise in the middle of there. This then leapt to it's got to be 20 and it can't be any higher. It ended up at 21. And it ends up being a much bigger corporate tax cut than anyone was talking about before. But there was a wide agreement that our corporate tax rate was uncompetitively high and that there were too many loopholes and shelters and unintended consequences. Now, whether this code fixes that is a whole other question. The individual income tax cuts kind of came into play as a way for congressional Republicans to say, we're all about middle class. And the one thing the governor is absolutely correct about, they use the high tax, higher income states, which already pay a disproportionately high amount of tax because incomes are higher. They use them as piggy banks to help create revenue to fund a portion of the tax cut so they'd have enough money, even with a deficit increase, to stay under the level they needed to pass the thing with 50 votes in the Senate.
Ken, do you want to?
Yeah, I agree that the personal income tax cuts at the federal level came as a political add-on to balance it out in the political calculation. You couldn't do just business tax reform. But part of the question was, why does it matter at a state level? And the real issue for us, I think we all know people who you get to retirement age, and you hear it all the time. We're a good friend of mine I worked with for 25 years, now lives in South Carolina. Income tax rates are much lower, property taxes are much lower. That's one of the reasons why this issue of in New York State, the impact of the federal reforms will exacerbate already disproportionately high income and property taxes in New York. That's why this is a conversation. We're already bad. How do we prevent us from becoming worse because of federal tax reform?
So let me just make sure I get this straight, because I really am hopelessly behind here. You're both fairly conservative fellows. You don't like additional taxes. You don't like taxes getting too high. And you think that the governor, if he really wanted to do something, could lower the taxes. Nevertheless, you also are forced to defend the governor, if I'm thinking about this correctly, because you're both operating in New York State, which has been attacked unfairly at the expense of the red states. Is that right?
Well, the Business Council opposed the reduction, the limitations of SALT deductibility.
Well, of course.
There's both a tax policy argument and a practical argument. Tax policy argument is there is an element of double taxation. I don't think it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, but you're a New Yorker. You don't like it.
But that's the second part. The New York State, and this goes back to Senator Moynihan and his federal FISC studies 30 years ago. New York State is a major net contributor to the federal budget. We put in somewhere between $40 and $50 billion more than comes back to the state. And that's part of it because we're a relatively wealthy state, relatively high-income state. But it's disproportionate, and this will make it even more so.
You're right.
Well, quite on conservative grounds, regardless of where I live. There's a strong argument based on conservative principles to allow state and local tax deductions as a way to recognize the primacy of states and local governments in providing services and in the lives of Americans. That's federalism. And I'm very disappointed that more conservatives outside places like New York didn't see the value in that, but were content to just jump on this. Now, partly they were sort of egged on, frankly, by the shrillness of the objections by very partisan Democrats like Cuomo. But I wish they had seen past that and seen why, in principle, it was not a bad thing. Not a good thing.
Rather. I agree with you. Frank, thank you. Well, let's go to, Joe in Middletown. Hi, Joe. You're on.
Hello. There's another important component that's overlooked. It's sales tax. That could solve a lot of our problems. Sales tax would capture the underground economy. People who work off the books still have to buy things. They don't pay payroll taxes. Criminals don't pay payroll taxes. Plus, for those who say sales tax is regressive, it hurts poor people, I'll solve it. If you double the size of the market basket that we tax, you could cut the sales tax rate in half. For example, a poor person goes into Walmart and spends $100, he pays the sales tax. Corporation spends $100,000 on an ad in the New York Times or on a radio station, it pays no sales tax.
Right.
Accounting services and legal services are not taxed. Lawn mowing services are taxed. So tax more things, a wider array of things with sales tax. You could cut the rate in half if you doubled the market basket. Poor people pay less, and you're capturing more from things that are not taxed now.
Joe, but here's Liberal Alan asking you this question. It's still a regressive tax, isn't it?
No. I just cut the rate in half.
You could address that issue.
Think of it in terms of business. Okay. I have a small business. If I double my prices and lose half my customers, I'm taking in the same money. If I double the size of the market basket that I tax, I could cut the sales tax rate from 8% to 4%. The poor guy in Walmart is now going to pay 4%, but the rich, car dealer spending $100,000 on an ad is going to cover that.
I think that he's talking about, when he talks about the underground economy, what he's really making is the argument for more of a broad value-added tax, which has problems on the back end, because sales tax is still going to be avoided.
What do you mean on the back end?
On the back end being that it has the other problem that Ken talked about with the payroll tax, which is you tax all things almost invisibly at tiny rates, and it makes it easier to raise them. That's what happened. That's the experience in European countries that have value-added taxes. But I think in principle he's making a very good point. Quite apart from this whole federal tax reform response, having a very broad sales taxing just about everything with the sales tax at a much lower rate –
You could lower the rate.
He's right. No,
you could lower the rate, but it would still hit.
That's easy. You could take care of that. You could actually take care of that through the existing earned income credit plus other exclusions.
No, but wait, Alan, it doesn't hit poor people. Poor people don't spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on accounting.
He's making the point that a lot of services. He's making the point that a lot of the services you pay the tax on are not commonly used.
No,
by
I heard his
people.
Point, and I understand you can lower the rate. Nevertheless, everybody, poor people pay, and that doesn't change at all in terms.
Well, they
of
pay now,
but not in terms of a progressive income tax, in which if you're higher, you
pay
more.
No, but they
pay
sales tax now. They already pay sales tax.
Well, that's true. It's still a regressive tax even then.
You'd make it
no,
lesser.
No, because I'd be lowering the amount lowering of sales tax that poor
no,
people
no,
pay.
No, I hear you're lowering the rate. It's still regressive. Ken, you wanted to say something?
I was just saying,
That's the opposite of progressive.
Nah, come on.
Now, it doesn't do anything to address the issue we were talking about for the last 50 minutes. It's one other thing. It's a different, totally different subject matter, which we could talk about some other time.
Yeah, some other time. Okay, Joe in Middletown, thank you. Let's go to Merle in Argyle, where everybody wears socks.
Plus, it's a bad idea anyway.
Okay, Merle in Argyle, go ahead.
I got socks on. hi, guys. All right, this is getting back to the payroll tax. If I understood what you guys were saying about the payroll tax, everybody would see a reduction in their, if you're an employee with a regular business, you're going to see a reduction in your payroll on a weekly or biweekly basis. Is that correct?
You would, if this could be structured, you would have a reduction in your pre-tax earnings. Your post-tax, your after-tax earnings would be the same.
Theoretically, your take on it would be the same.
That part I don't understand what you mean.
See,
if I don't make any deductions, there is no benefit, right?
So if I reduce your pay and your state tax by the same amount, your wallet, it doesn't matter to your wallet. You end up with the same post-tax income. That's the theoretical
You're
approach.
Talking about on a weekly basis or a yearly basis?
It would be both. The point is that, this is one way you can make this politically attractive to both the employer and the employee. But the objective is, compared to before Congress limited deductibility of state taxes, we want both the employer and the employee to have the same after-tax income. And it can be done that way. Easier said than done, but it could be designed that way. That's what we're talking about.
It can be done that way only in theory. So basically what it is if you make $100 a week, you now have your employer deducts every week. If you have a weekly paycheck, he deducts, say, 4% for your state income tax. So your take-home, just net of that, is $96. We'll skip all the other stuff. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Under this, theoretically, your pay would be cut to $96, and your take-home wouldn't change because the employer would the burden of paying would shift to the employer.
That's very hyper-simplistic. Because I'm thinking about all the lower-income people in upstate New York that don't have this problem with all this over $10,000 in taxes. Are they going to lose out because of the payroll tax?
Theoretically not.
No.
Theoretically not. Practically speaking, it wouldn't work.
Okay. Merle and Argyle,
thank
you very much. Okay. So that just about brings us to the end of the show. We didn't leave anybody on the line. That's extraordinary, isn't it? Thanks to E.J. McMahon and Ken Kopulkowski of the Business Council for joining us today. Support for Vox Pop comes from 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonally inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine, 20railroad.com. The University of Albany Theater Programming, offering individualized education within a student-centered theater major to help train theater professionals for the 21st century, albany.edu/theater. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Director Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, Careers in Transition, LLC.com, The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, The Winter Opens, Albany. Alphonse Mucha, Master of Art Nouveau, an exhibition that examines the artist's role in shaping movement. HydeCollection.org. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Louise Butler for answering the phones. Our producer is James Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.